talking so fast you can run his podcast at 0.5. Results are conclusive, just know that he argues both sides. His GM is a shadow of his former self. Doppelganger Steph, the GM and the shadow, playing games only they know. Gavin Bugs of Onanto, the GM and the
Hello and welcome to Season 2, Episode 6 of Shadow of the GM podcast. Today I'm going to be putting on a call in from Jason Connolly of Nerds RPG Variety Cast and then talking about my recent OSE game ahead of the next episode of that game, which is coming tomorrow. But just sort of talk about the last experience and a little bit of feedback on that one. Since everyone else who's been in it has podcasted about it so far, I'm a little bit behind the curve, but let's get going with it. Anyway, before we do that, let's listen to hear Jason's got to say about my previous episodes about Pathfinder 2.
Hey Barry, Jason here. Interesting last episode. I want to respond to some of the call-ins, but that's going to take re-listening probably. As far as Che was talking about about arguing Dave Hargrave's setting, and that's definitely a superhero setting. Although it's interesting because you do start fairly weak, but characters get to be pretty powerful. Look at the Technos character class, where 40th level can begin nuclear figuring at a 10% base, and by the time they hit, you know, they can end up creating thermonuclear weapons, space flight, you know, bionics. So, you know, this is definitely a power game. It's not, you know, Arduin's also a world of rifts, where you have portals to different worlds and all that kind of thing. It's maybe the earliest published setting that has all that kind of thing in there. And while I love Arduin, it's definitely a Monty Hall kind of setting. So, for what that's worth, I don't know that really matters. I'm not bad-mouthing any of these games by any means. Like I say, I would happily play in Che's. If Che wanted to run Pathfinder 2 in a long-term campaign, I would sign up in a heartbeat. You know, I just think out of the two, I kind of prefer Pathfinder 1, but that's not anything against Pathfinder 2. I don't know. I think it's all kind of cyclic. It goes around. Like you say, it comes down to play style. In these newer games, a lot of these things have developed to go against that attrition-based play style. You know, old Dungeons & Dragons really falls into a resource management kind of game, in a game where you're worried about counting torches and counting spells and things like that. Some people like that, some people don't, and that's okay. I don't think that either one's a wrong way to play. I think there are plenty of games out there that people can find a game that suits the kind of play style they want to do. So I think that's okay. Tribalism, it's out there. I think the key to tribalism, though, and why tribalism is bad is when we're badmouth the other tribes, right? I think you're always going to tend to fall into certain groups and fall into certain, you know, you're going to mesh better with certain people than others. And that's okay. The key is to be respectful to those other people, respect their opinions, and to be able to have adult conversations with them without getting angry and calling names and all that kind of thing. So I'm not defending tribalism, but I think it, human nature is going to be, you're always going to end up breaking into groups of some sort. You just have to be respectful to the other group. As far as Against Dark Master goes, I'm enjoying it. I think it's an interesting system. Of the games on the market right now, I guess probably that's the way I would go if I want to try to get that kind of game system. I don't know. I think it's worth putting the extra effort into Rollmaster Classic or HARP. I really wish Rollmaster Express was still around because that seems like the perfect thing for what we want. Rollmaster Express is kind of like the starter set, and it's totally compatible with Rollmaster Classic. But sadly, you have to just go find a used copy of it if you want it now. But I think Rollmaster Express is the best newer version of MERP, to be honest. But Against Dark Master is fine. I'm not poo-pooing the system. It's just, I don't see a reason to pick it over the others. But we're having fun playing it, and I'm looking forward to the next session and trying out the journey rules and things like that. if Barry stops pushing GURPS on us, maybe we'll eventually get to play Barbarians Lemuria in our Wednesday morning group. I don't know. He's infected Rob into wanting to play the fantasy trip now. So your evil campaign is working. But I'll still play with you guys. It's okay. I see how it is. Anyhow, enjoy the episode. I'll probably listen to the next one. Talk to you later.
Thank you, Jason, for that series of messages. A fair bit to unpack there, I guess, on that one. I mean, I still can't comment on Arjun because I don't know it, but it is interesting what you say of it being the superhero setting. And I think that comes back down to, I mean, I guess what Che was saying, and I guess it comes down to what we're saying about the playstyles, that I think that's what, you know, he was looking for. He's not looking for a really gritty OSC game where you die every 5 seconds and your characters are all dying left, right, and center. Because as Che said, that's not fun for him anyway. He doesn't find that particularly fun. Not saying that's not fun for everyone. That's just what he was saying. That to him wouldn't be fun. So therefore, he doesn't have the problem with having those bit more hit points at sort of first level. And I guess to be fair to that, I've not really done a recap of the other Pathfinder. I missed the last episode of the Pathfinder game, I should say. I didn't manage to make it because of issues with children and falling asleep from being exhausted, unfortunately. I wasn't able to make the last session, but we had a TPK. We got wiped out by a dragon. So, you know, I can't really say you're overpowered in that game because you can still die. So we still have the TPK. I mean, to be fair, you were breathed on by a dragon. So that's going to kill most parties in most games, I imagine, especially at first level. So it's one of those things I can't really complain too much about. It would have been fun to be in there and get obliterated by said dragon. But there you go. So it is possible to die in Pathfinder 2. Not let anyone tell you you can't. We've had that issue with 5e before now, so it is definitely possible to die. And like you said, it is down to those play styles as to what you like. I mean, I think we talked a bit about, some of us have talked about different games. Joe Richter talked about in his podcast about, you know, he likes the high fantasy, he likes being able to do all the cool stuff with the characters and things. So again, that's you guess you do pick your system, or at least a flavor of your system, based on how you want to play and what sort of experience you want. I guess to very briefly touch on the tribalism, yeah, that, I guess that is the issue of tribalism. Everyone's going to have their preferred things. I mean, Che talked a bit about the Negasphere on, I don't know, it was in Dungeon Master Diaries or in one of his roleplay rescue ones, about the issue that there is a lot of negativity out there. And I guess that's that downside of that tribalism where, you know, you talk about a system and then lots of people start poo-pooing it. And I think, you know, I want to say it was Robin Laws that once said to me, or once said in a Twitter conversation, people need to stop saying this is bad because this is rubbish, because they need to say, oh, I'm not a fan of it because, or I'm not really too keen on this. But then, like Che said, the problem is it's always negative. And I think that's a human condition kind of thing. I think we're, when we critique something in our heads, we're kind of picking up the bits that we don't like, while necessarily promoting the bits we do. And you know, I don't know if we can ever get past that, because again, said it's kind of how I think our brains kind of are wired in a way to look at things that way. And that doesn't mean the system's bad, it just means there's bits that we aren't too terribly happy about. But like you said, that tribalism can be an issue. I know, interestingly, even on the Steve Jackson Games kind of sides of things, I do sometimes see in the Fantasy Trip Discord servers people slagging off GURPS, interestingly. So even people who play games by the same publisher aren't always happy. And this reminds me very much of the D&D, like the basic versus AD&D kind of arguments and stuff, where everyone's slagging off the other editions and all the edition wars we get into, even from WotC and all through their versions as well. So, you know, it's one of those that I think at the end of the day, people are gonna, you're still gonna see that tribalism existing. But yeah, I'm not one so much to go, I guess, and slag off one version. I might talk about what I liked and didn't like about it. If you've heard my reviews, I'm quite good at, I'll try and do my best at also extolling the virtues of the versions of games that I've played, not just sort of picking on those bad points and pulling them out. I will mention them because I think it's worth raising those points, but I do try and be balanced and also say the things that I think are really good about them and what, you know, works really well. I guess on Against the Dark Master, I will want to do an episode when we finish. We're not finished really playing those sessions yet. The one next week might be our last one. We'll have to wait and see whether we decide to do any more. If that's so, I might go back and do a recap, because I have, I guess, changed my thinking a little bit on it, on some aspects of it. So we'll talk about it in a good way, I should like to say. So Che, if you want to listen to that one, it might be worth listening to, because you might find I've kind of changed my opinion a little bit. I think having played it now, it's one of those things where I say, always play it, don't just read the book, because having now played it and run some of it, I think I prefer it more now I've actually played it. So yeah, my life lesson still goes on that one about, you know, don't judge a book by its contents, actually run the game and then you'll see how well it plays. I mean, there are some issues that we had around it, but I think it definitely went better than I thought it would. Some things I enjoyed more than I expected to, I guess. What are we on to? Oh yeah, talking about my evil cult of GURPS. Well, it has to be said that we've won now, Jason, haven't we? Because you're now going to play a GURPS game after against Dark Master. I don't think I take the credit for it, because I kind of feel like it was actually you playing in Che's Saturday GURPS game that actually broke you in the end. I have to say, saying, okay, well, let's play some more GURPS then. So we'll see if I don't accidentally send you back the other way, but we shall see. So with that GURPS in mind, let's move away from GURPS again this episode, and let's talk a little bit more about, well, talk about now, the OSC game that I've been playing with Rob Menyon from Confessions of Wee Timorous Bushy. So let's talk about Baromaze, baby. So last week, well, 2 weeks ago now, it'd be almost, we played in a session of Rob from Confessions of Wee Timorous Bushy's Baromaze OSE game. And I was playing Vili the Dwarf, still first level, went back to the Barrows. We actually went back to explore Barrows we'd seen before. Have talked about this in some of the podcasts, so I'll kind of very briefly gloss over it. Effectively went in, realized there was something lurking at the back of this underground barrow. And the first thing I want to say about that is that it was quite an interesting experience in a way, because we're not using sort of VTT tabletops so much. We're using Roll20, but Rob is basically just kind of sketching on the Roll20 things like sort of rough diagrams like you would have done back in the day on bits of scrap paper, kind of showing the layout of the rooms. And one of the things I'd sort of not realized till about halfway through the session was how much I was in my head visualizing the game more than I possibly have done recently with using VTTs a lot more on actual like high quality maps and counters, is that I really had a very strong image in my head when we were going down into this barrow and sort of looking around and seeing what was in there of this thing that we were trying to work out what it was. And it was like, he said it was almost like a chest kind of shape thing, but of something alive because it scuttled back from the light. And then we can kind of make out the tail and the pincers. And it was really kind of vivid in my head, this kind of image of this thing sort of scuttling back into the recesses of the corridor. It was kind of bizarre. At the time, I hadn't really picked up on it, but it was interesting afterwards when I kind of thought back and thought, you know what? I don't kind of get that same experience as much, I think, when I'm using these high quality maps in other games. It did make me think a lot more about, you know, do I concentrate a bit more on theater of the mind? And again, I guess it depends on players. I mean, I think players do like battle maps and things. It's not always saying that it's a bad thing to have them. But it was quite interesting to see how different that experience was. And I think it was interesting, I guess, from my point of view, to realize how much that part of my brain hadn't been being used when I have been playing games with battle maps, that maybe that part had switched off a bit when I've been doing things. I don't know if it's different as well when I'm the GM winning the game, that I don't visualize it in the same way as maybe I do as a player. So it's a bit of weird thinking about that. So it's a bit of a random aside on that one. What did happen, however, at that point was that we ended up foolishly perhaps deciding to attack this giant scorpion. I think I possibly couldn't remember how dangerous giant scorpions are back in the day for first level characters. I think I maybe have played games where giant scorpions are fairly weedy compared to characters, but this is not the case in OSE. And it was a bit of alarm bells were ringing a little bit when we basically, to be fair, in my defense, I didn't start the combat. The range people behind decided to let loose the weapons, and they basically peeved off this scorpion by shooting at it. They did hurt it, but it became quite apparent how difficult this thing was to injure to get through its carapace. I mean, we're talking D&D, so it's AC, so it's to hit, but, you know, it's quite clear on a to-hit basis that that's more talking about armor. So it was quite clear at that point in time. So I was getting slightly concerned when I realized how difficult this thing was to injure. That suggested this thing was probably a bit tough. But we were kind of at that point in time slightly committed because we had everyone in the front line. Now, the issue there also became that in the first round of combat, said thing killed Jason's character pretty much straight away. As he tells you himself in his own podcast, he rolled very poorly. Although that came to save me later on, which I'll mention in a bit. But basically, yeah, he died in the first round of combat. Now, this made me think a little bit about something that I mentioned earlier in this episode when we were talking about the call, and also something that Che mentioned about, you know, dying in those sort of games and that possibly not being fun. Now, Jason took it really, really well. I mean, Jason will say himself in his podcast about how he doesn't mind and those sort of things, but it did kind of highlight that if you're the kind of player who doesn't enjoy being taken out of that early in a session, that could definitely be an issue with like those sort of more deadly systems like OSE if you don't have backup characters ready to play. And we'll talk a little bit about more thinking about that in a minute as well. But essentially, it meant that Jason's character was out in the first sort of brief moments of combat, and therefore he wasn't really able to play the character any longer. Now, Rob managed that really, really well, I believe, because Rob was very good when he GMs about when there's random rolls and stuff. He takes, gives people turns in making rolls. Then what he did was, because Jason basically was out of the game as a character, he let Jason roll the attacks for quite a lot of the monsters in the game, basically, and that kept him involved, kept him really engaged with the game. And I really want to kind of shout out to Rob about that's really a good technique. And I also remember to try and steal that one myself sometimes when I'm looking at running these things in the future. I mean, Jason's wasn't by far the only character death in that game. So after finally managing to kill this giant scorpion by luring it outside and try to use a bit of tactics, which didn't really work that well because the trap we tried to set off to injure it didn't work. But we ended up killing it by, I guess, a bit of inspiration from Jason's death and some lucky dice rolling. In the end, we managed to kill it before it killed me. Yeah, every time Jason rolled to hit me with the scorpion, he rolled awfully, like really, really bad. So I'm thankful to Jason. Jason, you saved my life through dying, which is always, it's a random statement to make, but there you go. So he kind of saved me because whenever Rob rolled the dice, he was rolling like quite well. Yeah, but every time Jason rolled, it was like very bad rolls. So yeah, Jason, thank you for your bad dice luck from saving my character's life. I was very sure. It's quite interesting when I play the game because I'm aware of how deadly OSC is, and but I play Vili as he's a fighter, sort of he's a dwarf, so sort of a fighter character. He's obviously quite honorable. He's quite charismatic, so I can't really see him as someone who like run away and cowardly hide. I really get the impression he'd be someone who would try and protect his friends, so he is often in the front line, even though that's inherently dangerous, and I keep expecting him to die, to be perfectly honest. It's been 3 sessions now and he's not died yet. The problem is now I'm getting concerned, even more concerned he's going to die, because if he died for a session I'd kind of be less bothered because I'd, you know, rolled him up, but the longer he lives the more precious he's becoming anyway. So I guess I'll talk on that a little bit more again after this, but to what we're sort of thinking about doing for next time, or what I am doing for the next session, which is tomorrow now. But that's the other 2 character deaths. So he went to another room, there was a magical sword and some statues. The thief checked for traps sensibly, then in the end basically took the sword out, these statues came to life, basically killed the thief outright, came down, managed to then kill the gnome. I think he was a gnome illusionist, never really get much, didn't see much of the gnome, unfortunately. Didn't get much action for them. So that was that character's second character death in 2 sessions, sadly, so I feel a bit sorry for them. And again, I was being attacked at this point in time, and again, thanks to Jason's really bad dice rolls, did not die, could have been quite easily murdered by those things. There was a chance I could have survived. On the average of the dice rolls, I might have actually been able to make it through 1 attack from them, but certainly more than 1 hit from those, and I would have probably cacked it like the rest of them. So we then beat a very heroic retreat by basically just legging it away from these things and escaping. I did say at the time when we actually went down, let's never come back to this barrow again. It'll be interesting to see tomorrow's session if we decide to go in, because there was actually one more room we haven't explored in that barrow. So are we brave or stroke stupid enough to go back and investigate that barrow, or are we just going to give up? So, but in my planning ahead of that, Rob was very good in very heavily insinuating and pointing out that we can actually hire retainers in this game. We don't have to keep going in and putting our own lives. I mean, obviously we still have to go down with the retainers. So I have actually tried to hire 2 retainers, but I could only hire 1 because it made more sense to kit someone out, spend the money on them, even share XP with them, because from Vili's point of view, Vili doesn't really want to die. So although he's heroic, he's not also stupid. He doesn't want to like, run out on his own in the front all the time. So it would really help to kind of bolster that front line, because at the moment it's just him and Calphon, who's the elf, who really sort of stand in the front line to fight. And they're sort of fairly capable fighters, but they're still quite vulnerable as it stands at the moment. So it made sense to sort of bolster that with some other people that can help fight. It's basically about dividing the attacks from the opponent, so it's not a case as if you load 2 fighters in the front, you're going to get swamped basically by enemies. It's about kind of building that front line. And by the looks of things, a couple of the other characters in the game have also hired a couple of retainers to come and help fight as well. So we've got, I think we've got a man-at-arms, a woman-at-arms, as Rob said, and a halfling-at-arms. So it'll be interesting to see how that mix helps in that front line. Rob has expressed some concerns about it being swamped by retainers, but to be fair, I think 3 retainers, because we've lost one player won't be here from last time, so it's not really like too much of an extra character bloat. We've got 2 other characters who are NPCs kind of floating around, I guess, more than that person's, but again, I think we've got 1 each really. So I mean, I don't know how Rob plans on doing it, whether he's planning on running those, whether he wants us to basically control them a bit to some degree and do the roles. We'll have to wait and see in the session. My other thinking was, from the point of view of staying engaged in the game, that if I have even if it's a 0 level character, if Vili, say, dies, but the 0 level retainer is still alive, then even if it's for like a round or 2 more of combat, there's still that ability to kind of stay engaged through the retainer or through somebody else's retainer potentially. So my kind of thinking was that if we bring the retainers in, there's also that case that, you know, if the character dies, there's still a way of kind of staying actively on the player side. I mean, I think Rob will do a good job of, if some of us die, about again getting us to roll dice for monsters and things again, as he did last time. But I just kind of felt like it was quite a good idea. It was interesting seeing some of the characters in the game, players for characters, I don't know which, hanging back a bit this time we went down into the barrow, probably quite sensibly thinking, oh, I'm not going back down there again, you guys are crazy. And strange enough, they're the ones that survived. So yeah, it was an interesting game, very, very deadly, it has to be said. I had a lot of fun, but then I didn't die. It's hopefully the players who were playing still had a lot of fun despite the character deaths, but I think it's one of those where it has to be taken on board that that's something that's expected to happen. Like I said, another podcast, if you're playing games like Call of Cthulhu or Paranoia, you need to have that sort of clear mindset that this is something that might happen to your characters very regularly, and it's about, I guess, trying to have that sense about not killing them. or about not being too upset when they die. That's what I'm more meant to say. They are going to die probably at some point in time. It still means it's going to be a bit stressful because, like, when I play Vili, I'm now concerned about him dying now that I've played it more with him living through it. So we're going to have to see how that goes. So I will be a bit more sad if he dies now than I would have been on the first session. But at the end of the day, you know, I am kind of not resigned to the fact, but I'm kind of understanding the fact this is a game we're playing and it's one of those things. So it will be a bit sad. Like I said, hopefully with the fact we're playing a bit more intelligently now, that will kind of change things. But we'll have to see. I mean, it's a dice roll at the end of the day. You can have an unlucky dice roll and things can go wrong. But yeah, that's kind of my thoughts, just sort of recapping that OSE game and the madcap insanity and awfulness of our attempt. So things really learned in that. You don't mess with giant scorpions at first level. You also, you know, don't mess with statues with shining swords in their hands, even if you detect for traps. Yeah, there's a whole conversation about traps and whether it was a trap or it was some sort of magical trick and if the thief should be able to detect it, because he made a fairly good detect traps roll. But again, if you want more sort of discourse on that, I'd go to Rob's podcast, so Confessions of Wee Tim Rasputi, where he talks a lot more about what we discussed and what we did there. And I think we've got a way of moving forward with that. But it's one of those rules, you know, rulings versus rules things with things like OSE, where, you know, the GM has a bit of say and can discuss it with the players and agree what seems reasonable to us is how we play it, rather than being hard and fast wired into the rules. If you look at games like 3.5 onwards, they tended to be quite specific on how magical traps are detected and stuff and how they're disarmed and things, whereas this doesn't really say. It just talks about treasure traps being detected and doesn't really say how that applies to things like magical traps and magical effects from things when they're moved, etc. So that was an interesting debate in a way about how that was going to be handled. But again, this is another key thing to raise, I guess, about OSE is it is from that older school where a lot of those rules aren't codified, so you do have to have those conversations and those agreements about it. So anyway, that's kind of it for this episode. It was just kind of a brief one again, but wanted to recap a bit on OSE before I go into my next episode in case I die and get very disgruntled. If I get very depressed about it, let's talk about it whilst I'm still enjoying it first. Anyway, but that's kind of the end of this episode then. So that's it for this episode and probably for this week. Just wanted to say thanks again to Jason from the RPG Variety Cast for calling in. If anyone's got any comments or questions, you can leave me messages on Anchor. So it's anchor.fm/GMShadow. You can also email me at gmshadow@hotmail.com. And you can also find me on Twitter at GMShadow. I also kick around some of the Discord servers. I'm on things like the GURPS and Fantasy Trip Discord server, kicking around on a few other ones as well. So keep an eye out for me. You can usually recognize me by my GM Shadow symbol, which matches the one from this podcast. So without further ado, until next time, keep on gaming.